Welcome to Truth and Liberty. Thank you for joining our daily live call-in broadcast, where trusted leaders bring biblical insights to the issues, and you can call in and get your questions answered in real time. According to the Bible, it's the truth you know that sets you free. So call in today to get answers, information, and resources to help you stand for truth and effect godly change in our nation and the world. And now, here's your host for today's broadcast.
Hi, welcome to Truth and Liberty, a very special broadcast with, well, with one of my favorite people in the world, who is my favorite congressman. His name is Congressman Louie Gohmert. I got to tell you some good news, but first I want to introduce this guy. I can't not put him on the air right away because, you know, when I would tell him, hey, you're my favorite, he'd say, yeah, you say that to all the members. And I actually wrote it in the book to prove it. Here it is. Congressman Louie Gohmert has always been my favorite, and I'm honored that he would, he tweeted about me when we were down working on the heartbeat bill. He is a member of Congress that was a leader, a guy that I respected more than, frankly, anybody else in Washington. He was a former felony judge. He served on the Chief Justice of the Appellate Court in Texas, ran for Attorney General. We're going to get him back as a public servant because he actually does what a public servant's supposed to do, serve. And we are just so grateful to have you, a champion for life, a champion for liberty. Congressman Louie Gohmert, welcome to the program.
Oh, thank you, Janet. You know, it's always great for me to be around you. If I'm down, you're the best medicine I can possibly have. Thank you.
Well, you know, it's just so refreshing to have somebody who you trust. You know, most programs, I'll just tell you, we want to make sure that they're saying the party line and they're not going to go off course. But we didn't really do show prep because I just trust your counsel. I just trust your opinion. And this is going to be, a very exciting discussion. But I've got some very exciting news to start with. If you feel like many in America, certainly I was one, that was so frustrated by the Hitler Youth on campuses across America, beginning with Columbia University. It was refreshing to see Speaker Mike Johnson come out, to Sean Foyt, who came out. Eric Metaxas was there. They had a pro-Israel demonstration, but it wasn't enough. I just like, God, what is the way? And a day and a half ago, I was driving down the car, listening to the news, and the idea hit me, hey, you know what? Let's take to the airwaves. And I don't mean the mainstream media. We can't really trust them very much these days, but we can still take our message to the air. And that is actually happening right now as we speak. Let's go and show you that there is a plane that is flying over New York. And it's really great because it happens to be rush hour in New York right now. And they are seeing a banner that says, let's take a look at it. It says, God bless Israel. You'll get a close-up of it in a second. But here's the plane. It was circling around Columbia University for all those rent-a-mobs, the jihad squads. They were holding Hezbollah flags, Hamas flags. And this was the message. So I just pitched this idea to some leaders like Richard Harris from Truth and Liberty Coalition. And I said, hey, Richard, you want to help us out? And he right away didn't have to ask twice. He says, we're in. Others like Morningstar Ministries and Michigan Transformation, they joined together, individuals, churches, pastors. They said, I want to be a voice for Israel. And next week, we're going to be announcing several other universities where we're going to be flying the banner that stands with Israel. My message to them, and I put it out in a release today, is look up. To our Jewish friends, look up. You don't stand alone. And you know, if you ever wondered, what would I have done? You know, I hear a lot of people, Congressman, I'm sure you have too. They said, you know, if I was alive in the 1930s in Germany, I would have been a voice. I would have stood against the Hitler Youth on the universities of the day. And the real answer to that question is, what would you have done? Is what are you doing right now? Would you agree?
That's right. I absolutely agree. Would you be open to a trivia question? Do you know?
Sure.
Well, I'm sorry. I don't mean to put you on the spot, but
we might go to break real quick.
Where Hitler got the term Sieg Heil, the big salute, he would yell it, and then the crowd would yell Sieg Heil. Daniel Greenfield has an article out today with Frontlines. He's a senior fellow with David Horowitz, but I did not know this till I read his article. The Nazi chant was borrowed from Harvard football cheers and imported to Germany by Ernst Putzi Hofstengel, a Harvard man in good standing who befriended Hitler and helped build a more respectable brand for the National Socialists. Wow. That Sieg Heil salute came from Harvard. Wow. So, yeah, and they were embracing, even back then in the Ivy League, this idea of socialism. And that's where you can go if you are told you are so elite, you are so above everyone else. Then, of course, well, if you're that elite, wouldn't you want to help others by making their day-to-day decisions for them? That's where it all goes, and that's where this idea is coming from. It's come a long way from the days when Harvard and Yale were established to teach ministers of the gospel of Jesus Christ. And if you go back and look at the oath that the students had to take in order to be admitted to Harvard and Yale, I mean, I'm not sure that there are many Christians that could live up to that oath. Pretty stout. So we come a long way from those days.
Very, very sad. Hey, let's take a look. Oh, go ahead.
Can I mention one other thing about this not being new? It took me way too long to read it, but William F. Buckley Jr.'s book that he wrote a year after he graduated from Yale, God and Man at Yale, mm-hmm. And he deals with this issue. Have you ever read that? It's a great little book, and it's hard to find now, but he was pointing out, and the faculty and the administration didn't let him give a speech that he was supposed to give because he was pointing out, look, the president of Yale says he's a strong Christian, and we believe he is, and the huge majority of the trustees, the corporation they call it, that runs Yale, they're all Christians. And yet they hire an agnostic atheist to run to teach religion in the name of academic freedom. And then Buckley's pointing out, and they all believe in capitalism. That's how they made their money. It's how they've supported things. And yet they're hiring socialists to teach economics. That makes no sense. As he points out, academic freedom does not mean you have to hire people that are teaching things you know are destructive. But boy, do we need that kind of preaching about how to run schools nowadays.
Yeah, no kidding. And I'll tell you, they've got professors now, and you look at Columbia, they're actually coming and joining in the jihad, chasing Jewish students off campus, forming a line so they can't get into class, telling them they can't come. They've got to stay home because we can't protect your safety. And one of the quotes from the press release that we put out today was Ramiro Pena, and he says, hey, if these juvenile delinquents can't keep their campuses safe, they need to do that or face termination. And I think that's where we are right now. One of the messages that Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu sent is that you need to stem this right now because it's only going to get worse if we don't. And the good news is, I prayed yesterday, Congressman. I said, you know what? I want this message that we are standing united, that we are taking this message to universities across the country. I want it to reach the ears of Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu. And I am told that the picture was delivered to him and that this will be in the Jerusalem Post. So prayers are being answered. And before we could even get the first plane off the ground, we already have many other campuses that are going to be targeting next with a pro-Israel message. But I want to show some of those campuses that are right now the Hitler youth of today. Let's take a look at some of the video and some of the universities. And these are some that we can target with your help. Let's take a look. There it is, Columbia leading the charge. And I don't know if there's sound here or not, or if I'm just not getting it. Notice Ohio State is there. That's very troubling. University of Michigan, Princeton, you mentioned, MIT. These are schools that need to be responded to. And I think it's time that we use that voice. The only way to keep our freedom is to use our freedom. And you know what? I saw an article yesterday, and it says it starts with the Jews. You know the Niemöller quote. You know, when they came for this group and that group and the next group, and we didn't speak up. Well, we had better learn from history and speak up now. What would the message be that you would say to these administrators of these universities that can't keep the Jewish students safe?
Yeah, well, it's the message, the very one you're talking about, that you will become, they'll be coming for you at some point. This has to stop now. It's racism, it's anti-Semitism, and every time it has showed its ugly head, civilization has suffered to massive degrees, and you don't want to be responsible for that. This needs to be, as Don Knotts used to say, nipped in the bud, but it's blooming out. It's been there growing for years and years, but it's got to be stopped now. We can't let this grow and spread across the country.
I think that we need to have a definitive action against these students. You're rising up and you're chanting death to America, death to Israel, you know, the river to the sea, and calling for the extermination of our brothers and sisters of Jewish faith. Then we need to deport these people. We need to pull the student loans of these students, because this is not what we want to use our tax dollars, that we want to welcome among our borders, because it is dangerous and it is spreading like a cancer.
It is. And it's got to be stopped, like you say. But actually, Biden is trying to make sure that people that are out there protesting, that are in school in the universities, that those, you know, majority of Americans didn't go to college. And he wants to make sure they're paying for those folks to be out there making chants against Israel, against Jews. It's just incredible that we've allowed this to grow. But if you go back to the late 60s, the 70s, you know, they were, back at that time, the socialist, communist, progressives, whatever you want to call them, basically the same thing, they were trying to stir up unrest so they could get that big revolution going. And as David Horowitz has pointed out, you know, because he was one of them back then, the worse, the better. In fact, I asked him one time, you know, the Democrats have the convention coming up in Chicago again. Mm-hmm. Back in 68, these radicals like David Horowitz and Tom Hanks and all these folks, they stirred up trouble, the riots and all this stuff. They went after the Democrat convention. And I was asking David, I wondered, why did you guys go after the Democrat convention? They were going to nominate Hubert Humphrey. He was considered quite liberal. And he said, because, like you said, their idea, and he's totally converted now, but he said their idea was the worse, that the better. They were afraid if Humphrey got elected to be president, it would be really difficult to get college students out in the streets rioting. So they tried to submarine Hubert Humphrey's election. Isn't that interesting? I found
really
that fascinating.
Is.
That's why they went after, I said, you hated Nixon. Why didn't you go after his convention? No, we wanted him to be elected so that it'd be easier to get college students in the street rioting.
Wow. First thing I wanted to say, responding to your to the Biden forgiving student loans, he didn't forgive student loans. He just put the bill on all of us and those who scrimped and saved and maybe went
Thank
to trade
you.
School or
exactly
we're the ones
right.
footing that bill. That's what that means. But
exactly.
It's interesting that there is this movement, this ginning up of division. And I think we've got some fingerprints of a repeat of what we saw in the whole Occupy movement. Let's take a look at the tents that they're at Columbia University. They just all seem so similar. And I just ask you, if you have an organic movement where students decide that they want to do this on their own, but do they all buy the same exact tent? I wouldn't think so. Let's take a look and see what came out of, it was actually a Zero Hedge today. They all look pretty similar, don't you think, Congressman?
Well, when I was a Boy Scout, we couldn't get that many tents just alike, and we were in the same troop. That's amazing.
That's not cheap.
Tokyo,
by the way, that
right there.
Yeah, and the other tent they had in the middle there, that's not a cheap tent. That's like $30,000. It's what they use at weddings. Somebody is footing the bill. Somebody is funding this effort to gin this up all over the country. Who do you think's behind it? You got any theories?
Well, I read Peter Schweitzer's latest book, and he points out that their Chinese connections funding a lot of these groups to destroy American morality, to create chaos, like with BLM and other groups, and that they're figuring they can help destroy us from within by creating this kind of chaos, which is exactly what Marxists have done. They haven't been able to get the workers of the world in the United States to unite and rebel. And so they figured out we have to get a cultural war. And so why would anybody follow a guy like Marx? He couldn't even foresee labor unions. He couldn't see that the middle class wouldn't rise up in revolt. He couldn't see any of these things, and yet they're still following his stupid teachings. But that's, there are forces at work. If you go back to, I don't know if you ever heard of Carlos the Jackal, he made the quote one time, most famous probably assassin history, that the only way to bring down the United States is for Marxists and radical Muslims to unite, and then they can bring it down. Wow. So it's interesting seeing what's going on. There are Muslim groups that are joining in some of these protests that, you know, and for gay rights. And you go to the countries that they came from, and there are no gay rights. In fact, no. The death penalty for homosexuality in a number of the countries, and yet they're over here. Why is that? They're stirring up trouble. Bring down the United States, and then you can, then it would be interesting. Then you'd have radical Muslims fighting Marxists for control. And you know, by the way, people like the really wealthy that have funded so much of the breakdown of our foundational values, I know they think that they will ultimately be part of that little thin veneer that rules everybody and everything, like in the Hunger Games, that little group that's ruling everything. Mm-hmm. But history, they didn't learn enough history, because historically, when there is a revolution like that, they don't even say, thank you for all the money you spent to help us create the revolution. They take all the rest of their money, and they either kill them or send them to a gulag, a prison somewhere. So that's not going to be much consolation to those of us that see the greatest, most free country in the history of the world, more assets, more opportunities than any country in the history of the world, to see it go away because these people are so elite that they think they would be best telling people how to live. It's a dangerous time. It really is.
It is. I was asked today in a radio interview, and how is it that this is happening? And I just believe everything at the core is spiritual. How do you get the radical Islamists pairing with the homosexual activists when the Islamists want the homosexualist activists dead, as you've just pointed out? It makes no sense that those would join together. You see these groups, and you know they said Black Lives Matter, but apparently Jewish lives don't matter to them very much at all. Look, the whole point, and you know it from Martin Luther King Jr.'s speech, that we're to forget about the color of our skin, to look at the content of our character. In fact, what we had Ken Ham on a week ago talking about how, you know what, there really are no races. It's the human race. It's one blood. It all goes back to the beginning of creation. And there is some hope. And I want to interject some hope that I was very encouraged to see. Sean Foyt, who is a worship leader, he's the guy that was breaking all the COVID restrictions when they said you're not allowed to worship. You can keep the porn halls open. You can keep the gambling facilities open. Yeah. The abortion mills can run. But we had to close the churches. And we're not allowed to worship. He said, no, not on my watch. I love this guy. He ran for Congress. I think he's doing more good on the outside, frankly. But he was there yesterday, and I want to show a little clip of what took place in the heart of it. Where the battle's the hottest, he went down there. They thought it was going to be a couple hundred, and it ended up being a massive crowd of pro-Israel, pro-America students and citizens. Let's take a look and see what happened yesterday downtown New York.
America stands with Israel! America stands with Israel! America.
So I guess we've got a little more time than I thought, but I want to just say that it's encouraging to see people of courage, to hear God bless America, whether you've got the other side of the campus yelling death to America, death to Israel. It's just refreshing to see. And I think that's why so many have come in to get the word out in the airwaves above these campuses, because we're sick of it. We're sick and tired of this assault against our Jewish brothers and sisters, against the nation that was attacked. These were the people who were victimized by Hamas. They were raped, they were murdered, they were terrorized. And yet, how do you explain that the protests are on the side of the terrorists? Again, the only explanation I have is that this is demonic at the source. This is spiritual.
Well, and I don't know if you're familiar with Natan Sharansky. He was like Solzhenitsyn. He was a Russian dissident Jew. And so he was thrown in prison. And Reagan's efforts ended up helping him and others be released. But he had written a great book that President George W. Bush had cited defending or the case for democracy. But and I was talking to Ron Dermer that represented Israel before it was at the Capitol. And I said, I know you helped Sharansky with that book. It was a great book. And he said, have you read his book, Defending Identity? And I said, no. He said, you got to read that. And, you know, in that book, Sharansky, it was written in 2008. He could have written it on October 8th because he makes clear the point that it is a lack of moral clarity that you have to teach to students all the way growing up, all the way through school. But that lack of moral clarity, he says, is what causes people to confuse an arsonist with the firefighter, or those who have just attacked and mercilessly killed people with those who come and defend themselves and kill those. He said it's that lack of moral clarity, and that's where the breakdown has come. And it is, he is so right about that. And that's why in the Old Testament, we're taught to teach your children, put those scriptures everywhere, including on the doorposts. And I'd forgotten about that. And the first time I was in Israel, I'm going, what are these little tubes on the door frames? Oh, those are scriptures. Oh, wow, yeah. Like we're told to do. So that's where it's broken down. It is demonic. It is an effort to tear down godly principles.
And, you know, it starts, as you said, in the schools. I just had a conversation with Senator Jason Raper from Arkansas. You may remember he was the one that passed the first heartbeat law in Arkansas in 2013. And I said, I believe that we've got a way to rescue kids from this agenda that's corrupting them in the schools. And I borrowed the idea from the Texas heartbeat law, where you add the civil penalties. Here's the idea. I'll pitch it to you. We're working on a model bill right now. And it says that we're going to remove the immunity from teachers, from librarians, from school board members for violating the state obscenity laws that are currently on the books. Right now, they're immune to push this agenda to groom kids in school. No, we remove their immunity and we give the civil remedy to the parents, to the citizens, so that if Johnny comes home with something that violates the grooming laws, the sexual obscenity laws, then guess what? Mom and dad have a remedy legally in the courts, just like we did with the heartbeat law. And by the way, I remember calling around to all the abortion mills when the Texas heartbeat bill was upheld, when we saved 20,000 lives before Roe ever crashed to the ash heap of history, and they were closed down because they were afraid of their motivation being limited, and that is the almighty dollar. So I'm excited about that prospect, because we've been talking about how bad the schools are. We need a solution, and I think that might be a step to where we need to be.
Oh, it's a big step. Absolutely. And thank you for all your work. You've made a difference. You really have, Janet.
Well, you know, I just have to say thank you for, you were there when we launched the federal heartbeat bill in 2017. You spoke there at on the Capitol. And I remember when we were looking, boy, years ago, we needed a pro-Israel resolution. Do you remember that? We came to your office with General Jerry Boykin, and we said, we need to get something to stand with Israel right now. And that was, I think, during the Obama administration when the prime minister was being treated abysmally. And you walked on the floor of Congress and introduced it, and it was done. And then you invited General Boykin to be there for the prime minister's address to Congress. I've never seen you on the wrong side of any issue. And that's why I'm just very, very grateful that we need you back. And you know, when I pray every day for godly counsel to be put in front of President Trump, for ungodly counsel to be removed, for godly counsel to be put in place, I'm praying. And I prayed with my husband last night again that God would catapult you to a place of influence, because one of the reasons I know you're going to give godly counsel is one time you told me, I don't know if you remember this, but that you're in the Word every day. And that's how I know you're not going to get off course. That's how I know you're not going to give counsel that takes us off the cliff, which is where we're currently headed at the moment.
Well, that was a promise I made to God back. I wasn't worried about Y2K, December 31st of 1999, but I was concerned about, where am I supposed to go? What am I supposed to do? I want to be obedient. But anyway, that was a promise I made, is I will be in your Word every day. And I am.
It shows. It absolutely shows. Hey, I want to open up the phone lines. I kind of don't want to share you with any callers, but I'm going to do it anyway, because, you know, that's the format, right? So if you would like to talk to my favorite congressman, Congressman Louie Gohmert from the state of Texas, who I believe is going to be used by God in a mighty way to steer our country back on course, give us a call, 719-619-2341. The lines are open. If you'd like to join us, 719-619-2341. We have a whole lot more when we come back. I've got some videos I want to play from Congressman Gohmert on the floor of the House. You're not going to believe some of the issues this guy is standing for. I want to hear your opinion on climate change. It's stark. It's startling. And it's a lot of fun, because you have the courage and the humor. We'll find that out on the other side of this break when we come back.
Andrew has many conferences and seminars around the globe each year. For the latest information on Andrew's complete speaking schedule, visit our website at awmi.net/events.
You were created with a purpose. Written in the heart of God. Long before you were born, He is calling you to find it. Want to help you experience His unconditional love, to be equipped and empowered to become a world changer.
Hey, you know, a big part of what we do here at Truth and Liberty is to provide you with the resources that you need in order to stand for truth in the public square. So I want to remind everybody to go to our website and check out our resources page at truthandliberty.net/resources, where you can find material that discusses just about every issue we're facing today in our culture. And these are things that are prepared by our strategic partners and some of the most influential and important organizations in America today.
We're back with Congressman Louie Gohmert. Thank you so much for joining us. I'm Janet Porter. I am designated the Friday host. What a privilege it is to be here, to be a part of this team with Andrew Womack, Richard Harris, and the group. I wanted to just, if you've just joined us, just give you a little flash of good news. I think they've just now landed the plane that's been flying over New York over all the rush hour traffic. Just want to put that back up on the screen in case you've missed it. It's a banner that the people have seen from Columbia University and from the state of New York. In the midst of all this assault against Israel, we're standing with them, and we're saying God bless Israel. And I just want those people to know, those who've become under fire, who've come under attack, to look up. Because you do not stand alone. We are now in a place, what would you do If you lived in 1930 Germany, you don't have to wonder anymore, because that's where we are right now. The Hitler Youth used the same tactics on universities across America. And as Mark Gurley said in his press release we put out today, is one Holocaust is enough. It's more than enough. And so we're standing strong. We're joining Sean Foyt. Eric Metaxas was there yesterday with worship there at Columbia University. Mike Johnson, members of Congress, were there. I just got to know that you would be there too, Congressman Louie, if you were still serving, because I've never seen you back down from a fight. When Judge Roy Moore was under fire, I remember speaking at his rally, and I looked to my right, and there you were. You left Washington. You left all the hearings because you came to stand for a righteous man, and you stand for what is right. I'm just grateful. I'm grateful that I get to have you on the program, and I get to call you my friend.
I'm just grateful I get to hear you, because you do us so good. Let me tell you, thank you.
Well, you know, a lot of people know you.
We've got so much to do. But you know, Janet, one of the most frustrating things in my 18 years in Congress was not from non-Christians, but it was from Christians who I would be trying to stand up. We need to stop this now. We need to push this through. This is the time to do this. And I would get this, and no telling how many times I heard it. Louie, we don't have to worry. God's in control. And it was just so, God's in control. But a preacher, the pastor at Denton Bible Church, who's become a good friend, but he said at one time, preaching, God's in control, but just because he's in control does not mean he wants you to lean on your shovel and pray for a hole. And that is so perfect. He gave every one of us tools. Everyone has some tools that they can use. And sure, be praying while you're working and asking for a good result, but for heaven's sake, at least do the work. Use the tools you've been given. And there are too many people that are willing. It's a good cop-out. Well, God's in control. We don't have to worry. No, you don't have to worry, but you're expected to do the work. And so that's, he encapsulated my whole theory through life is, yeah, God's given everybody tools. Let's go to work, and we'll pray for good results while we're working.
Amen. You know, in the movie Light Wins, our documentary that we made, which you were in, by the way, I'm very grateful for that. But one of the things that David Barton said in that film is that God doesn't just sweep in and save a nation. He uses people. And, you know, people are praying for revival. We're supposed to be the revival. He works through people. We don't realize, as Andrew Womack talks about, we've already got it. We have power. We have authority. We just need to learn how to use it. We need to take the land to occupy until he comes. Because, you know, it's just bothered me that our country is burning down when there's so many Christians that are in it. We're supposed to be salt and light in this dark and decaying country, and we're just saying God will handle it. They're praying for the rapture. They want the escape hatch, but that's not what we're supposed to be doing on this earth, is it?
Yeah, and it's not just Christians. It's been a breakdown of the church, not doing the job the church was intended to do, and that gets back to teaching morality and being willing to take a stand. You know, like C.S. Lewis, when he was an atheist, he used to taunt Christians, say, how could there be a just God when there's so much injustice, so much wrong? And it hit him one time, wait, how could I know there was injustice and wrongdoing unless there is an absolute standard in the universe of right and wrong, just and injustice? And he said, because otherwise I would be like a blind man from birth trying to distinguish between light and dark. You can't do it unless there is an absolute standard. And once he realized that, he knew there had to be a universal source of that right and wrong. And that's what led him to God and then to becoming a Christian after that. But it is so important that people realize there is a right and wrong. And kids have been taught for way too many years, decades now, that it's really relative, you know, however it feels to you. And you go back to what John Adams said that this Constitution was intended for a moral and religious people. It is wholly inadequate for the government of any others. And that is so right. If we're not teaching right and wrong like we haven't been, then you have to do away with the Second Amendment. You can't give people freedom of speech. You can't give them freedom of assembly because they don't know right from wrong and they'll cause trouble. So if we're not going to get back to teaching moral right and wrong and absolutes that came from nature's God, as the founder said, then yeah, we'll end up getting rid of the amendments. I don't want to get rid of a single amendment. I want to keep those rights, but we're going to have to get back to teaching moral right and wrong.
Amen. And we need to communicate to the pastors that they've bought the lie that we're supposed to stay out. We're supposed to hand the keys of authority to the tyrants who hate us and hate our God. So we've got a ways to go. But the good news is God works through remnants, right?
Yes, he does. And you mentioned David Barton. David and I, we've been friends since 1989. And we were talking one time and he said, you know, we were talking about the two great awakenings in the 1700s and 1800s. And, you know, and I've read stuff. I didn't realize he said that when America was going through the great awakenings, the first and the second, they didn't know they were going through a great awakening. They were just people out there working and praying and witnessing and bringing people to the truth and the way in the life. And they didn't realize that the awakening was occurring. But of course, it ended up resulting in a generation that gave us the Constitution, the Bill of Rights, and then the Second Great Awakening awakened people that we shouldn't be treating brothers and sisters with chains and bondage. So, that is so important.
And one of the things Andrew Womack has talked about is that the Third Great Awakening has already begun. Many of us don't realize it. You know, it seems pretty dark right now. It seems pretty bleak.
Yeah, it does.
And yet God is moving behind the scenes. Hey, I want to cut to a video just because it's fun. We're going to talk about some more serious issues. But a lot of people don't know. They know that you're a champion for life. You're a champion for liberty, a champion for the Second Amendment and all of our Bill of Rights. But many people don't know how you have taken on the charge of climate change on the halls of Congress to communicate the importance of climate change. I just want to play a clip and get your response to it.
On climate change, I applaud the Democrats spending all that time. And if any of my colleagues here don't believe in climate change, you need to start. It's real. It's a fact. Most places it happens 4 times a year, and I think we need to acknowledge that.
So yeah, there's 4 seasons, and that's we need to acknowledge that climate change happens in most places in the United States.
I was afraid you were going to play the one we were in a natural resources hearing, and we had a leader from the Bureau of Land Management, and just droning on about how the Bureau of Land Management was doing so much to stop climate change. And when finally was my turn to ask questions, it just happened the week before I'd been talking to Jim Bridenstine, the former head of NASA. And Jim's a smart guy, went to Rice, was a Navy pilot, but I believe it was Navy, he was a pilot. But Jim was telling me that at NASA, they had learned, discovered that the Earth, that our moon was the orbit around Earth was slightly changing, and that actually Earth's orbit around the sun was slightly changing. And so I just had enough, their Bureau of Land Management is stopping climate change. You know, maybe you should work on the solar flares and all, but I thought about what Jim said, and I said, here you're doing what you can to stop climate change, but I just learned last week that the Earth's orbit around the sun is slightly changing. So what is the Bureau of Land Management doing to fix our orbit around the sun?
those clips.
I was just as sarcastic as I could be. Mm-hmm. And Anyway, the left went nuts. This guy is so stupid. He thinks Bureau of Land Management can fix the world. No, that's my point. They can't.
Call the joke.
And I asked one witness years ago, I said, he was supposed to be a weather historian. And I said, is the planet warmer now than it was back when the Norse came over to Greenland and had all these productive farms at Greenland where there's a lot of ice now? And he dodged it. He said, well, we can't really say because we didn't have enough readings from the southern hemisphere. So we can't say the planet was warmer. But yeah, the northern hemisphere was definitely warmer back then. Look, it's a cycle. It gets warmer, it gets colder. When I was in college at A&M, I remember seeing a headline on a magazine about how the world was beginning a new ice age, and that's how it would end. And as a Christian, I was going, that's not how the world is going to end. That's not right.
No.
And who knew, you know, wouldn't be many years later, they're going, no, we're not beginning a new ice age. Now we're starting a new heat age. And if you look at studies, though, if you were going to increase the temperature of the world half a degree or decrease it half a degree, which would you want to do? Well, it turns out if you decrease it half a degree, then you have much less crops. You're not able to feed as many people. There'll be more people starving. And if you increase it half a degree, you'll have more crops. And so there are problems both ways. But the thing is, we do need to be good stewards of that which God entrusted us with. But, you know, the climate change, that is nothing more than a way to scare people so they're willing to finish giving up the rest of their rights and say, oh, yes, here, big brother government, you take over everything and tell me what I'm allowed to do so that we can stop this evil, horrible thing called climate change. But then I think back about scripture, Janet. Didn't Jesus say something like, what does it profit a man if he saves his own soul, but he can't stop climate change? Was there something like that back there?
Don't think that's what he said.
Yeah, by the way, that may not have been quite it.
I don't know what version you're reading, but the thing is, it used to be that all of their global warming conferences, too many of them were canceled because they were snowed out, that all of a sudden they changed it to global, you know, to climate change.
That was one of the funniest moments in Washington. They came out decrying global warming, and they had a march planned, and it snowed on their global warming conference, and it kind of helped push them into saying it's climate change rather than global warming, because it didn't look good when they got snowed on.
All right, so I've got some topics that are pressing, and I want your take on whichever one you want to answer first.
Okay.
But I know you were among those who were the first to stand with the J6 hostages, those who may have committed a trespass violation that are still rotting in jail without a trial. Yeah. There's also the assault that's happening, the weaponized government that is going after President Trump, the number one presumptive nominee for the Republican, the number one opponent of the current administration, that they are going after him in multiple courtrooms, and also the elections, the election integrity. A lot of people are saying there's another plandemic coming down the pike. Any of those you want to handle in whatever order you want to handle them, but I want your wisdom. Tell us your take on what's coming and what we can do.
Well, I think Merrick Garland, you know, gave us his secret, what he's really about. And it is all about intimidation, to have such shock and awe in going after conservatives that they're afraid to ever come out and protest, even when it's peaceful and legitimate. Because I've heard people say, well, you know, I'm afraid to go out to any protests anymore. I might get arrested. And that's exactly what they wanted to do. But having, you know, such a long legal career, I have prosecuted people as assistant DA. I have defended people in criminal cases. For my decade of litigation after the Army, I was mainly in civil litigation, but I had some court appointments, some people that defended. And I'm telling you, in the 70s, 80s, and 90s, and I dealt with these people, I represented, when you get a call from an FBI agent saying, look, your client's being indicted, and so he needs to report to the county jail tomorrow at 10 a.m., 9 a.m., whatever, whenever. And you had your client there because you knew if he didn't show up, they'd come after him for that too, and it'd go rougher on him. So that's the way it was handled. If somebody had no violence in their history, they didn't go knock down a door. And as a judge here in Texas, no telling how many warrants I signed, but I'll tell you what, if our county sheriff or police had ever gone and knocked down somebody's door that had never committed a violent act, and you go charging in, I would be having them in my courtroom for their abuse of process, and we'd have a real come to Jesus meeting, so to speak, about, you know, the violating, the creating such massive injustice that it wasn't called for. And yet that's become a way of life now for the FBI. I've had FBI agents around the country tell me, you remember back when there had been peaceful, we would just tell them if they didn't have a lawyer, you need to show up. And, you know, we wouldn't be knowing if they tried to get away. But they didn't go knock down doors at 4 or 5 a.m. There's one group that really perfected that. And they were brown shirts. They were Gestapo in Germany. There is no reason to knock down law-abiding, peace-loving people's doors. If they committed a trespass, they didn't do any violence, there is no reason to knock down their doors. Or like one said, their daughter was drug up the stairs to show them where something was by her hair. You know, there's no reason for any of that. Those are Gestapo tactics, and they need to stop, but Merrick Garland is not going to stop them until he has finished totally intimidating anybody that disagrees with the socialist Marxist idea. Whether he believes in Marxism or not, he is totally supporting this Marxist takeover of our government. This is a very important year. People have got to wake up, pay attention, get involved, and make a difference themselves.
You know, I just want to put this idea out here. If there's somebody that's watching that is close to President Trump, here's an idea I want to float out there. I think Attorney General Louis Gohmert would be a really great move to bring justice to the Department of Justice. I think that needs to happen. I mean, although I wonder how really effective you are, Congressman. You've not had a pre-dawn raid on your home. The FBI hasn't come after you yet. I'm wondering if maybe you need to step it up or
knock
something.
Knock on wood. It may be coming, because...
Lord, help us.
Look at what they've done to Trump. I mean, basically manufacturing charges out of whole cloth that we've had people that did much worse that were never charged. But a president... and you charge him with corruptly hanging on to documents. This is a president that's already seen that if he doesn't hang on to the documents, they get lost, they get redacted, they disappear, and Congress can't get them. And that's only if you have a nice Corvette that you can put them beside to keep them safe for some reason. But it's a very dangerous time. And the good news is, though, the greatest generation, they went and fought. Many lost their lives. Many lost limbs, suffered tremendously. We, in our generation, will never be called the greatest generation, but we have a chance to save our constitutional rights, and our lives are not at risk, you know, unless you make the Clintons mad. I'm being sarcastic again, but no, our lives are not at risk. It's just a matter of stepping up and doing what's right. But let me tell you, everything that we as Christians, everything that conservatives do, we have to make sure it's peaceful 100%. We're going to have people that are trying to egg us on and create violence. Like, you know, there was a video, or I mean, an audio, I can't remember, it was a video in 2016 where James O'Keefe got a Democrat operative saying, yeah, we pay people to go out and start violence at the Trump rallies so we can blame him for being violent, causing violence. Look, that's what they want us to do. We cannot let them do that. We have got to follow the law. And you mentioned Dr. King. You read the letters from the Birmingham jail. I mean, this was amazing, amazing man. But he knew they had to be peaceful because what they were standing for would never have a chance unless they were peaceful. And then eventually people would realize it's not right what's happening to these folks. So that's what we've got to do to restore our liberty. We got to be peaceful, but we have got to speak up and we got to protest peacefully, follow the laws, but let our voice be heard. I love what, you know, you got the plane flying just to let people know, look, Israel, our Jewish friends, we support you. Maybe they're Jewish friends that are funding the other side, but those that care about Israel, and I certainly do, we have got to let them know we care and do something about it to help them.
What do you say to the people who say, you know what, yeah, we want to come out. We want to come out in mass. We want to vote for a change of this current administration that's oppressing America. But you know what, the machines, they're still rigged. There's still these ballot boxes that can be stuffed and these mail-in ballots. What do we do from here, Congressman? Because I don't think we've fixed up the voter integrity issue at all.
No, we haven't fixed it. There's some things that have been done to make it better. But I've traveled across the country speaking to groups from San Francisco to New York. And what I'm telling folks is you've got to get involved like never before. You have got to be a poll watcher. You've got, if you're not already working in your precinct, you got to be a poll watcher. And there are people that will give classes to groups that want classes. What can we do to be effective? I know if I were a state attorney general, I would have, like Texas, attorney general has 700 to 800 lawyers. I'd have lawyers in every county, but especially in our big cities where there was evidence of election improprieties in 2018, 2020, and you don't have to have criminal jurisdiction. Just if you have civil jurisdiction, you could have your attorneys there with their laptops, with the forms. And as soon as you have a witness that swears that I watched this voting impropriety, you run, get a judge to sign the TRO, the restraining order, the injunction. You get it done, you stop it right then. And if no attorney general is going to do their job and do that, then you can have private attorneys go to court. And you need to maybe do a little forum shopping to know where there's a judge that will uphold the Constitution and constitutional rights to a fair vote. But these are things that can be done. But for those that are not lawyers, you can make a difference. I mean, we have so many people in Texas that live in rural areas that say, I will do whatever we can. Well, Dallas needs some help poll watching and watching drop boxes and things like that, because we know there were voting improprieties. That's been proven, even though there are people that say, oh, that was debunked 3.5 years ago. Yeah, before all the evidence came out, but we got the evidence now. So people shouldn't get discouraged. There are things we can do. Our lives are not at risk for doing them. We just need to be out there. People may cuss us, may throw some stuff. I've been, you know, had worse done. But, you know, this is not much of a price to pay to save freedom for our children.
That's right. By the way, Chad Conley of Faith Wins is training people. He talks about the Grandmother Project, where they're going in and they're looking at voter rolls. And guess what? You got 20 people at the same address, and then you check out the address, and it's a field. Or if you've got voters that are over 100 years old, maybe we take a look at those. And he's getting people thrown off the voting rolls, which I think needs to happen. I want to open up the phone lines. Again, this is a riveting conversation. Nato, maybe you don't want to interrupt it. I was just kidding. We do welcome your calls. 719-619-2341 is the number to dial. 719-619-2341. If you'd like to join in the conversation with my favorite congressman, Louie Gohmert. And, you know, it's a little bit iffy, but I'm going to play a clip when we come back. Yes, many of you heard that I got a little side project going on. It sounds kind of frivolous. I assure you it's not. But it's a sitcom. The point of it is to reach the lost and disciple nations, kind of like the world has done with the media these days. But we've got a sitcom, and it's going to be, I'll be making an announcement soon, broadcast coming up next month on a network, on a Christian network. And there's a guy who keeps getting mentioned in this sitcom. His name is Congressman Louie Gohmert. And so I want to play a little clip when we come back about that. And I don't want to make you blush. It's I don't want to creep you out either. But it's just all in good fun. I do get teased because I do talk about you. I quote you a lot because I just admire your courage. And you need to be back in the mix, giving godly counsel to our leaders and helping to steer this country. By the way, one of the things that you do, and I think you would do very well for President Trump, you've done it in the past, is your sense of discernment. There's a lot of people who, to your face, act like they're with you, and they're really not. And so you've got discernment. That's a gift. I don't know if you know that, but you have a gift of discernment. And it's not just from looking to see the history of where people are, but you have that gift, and that gift is needed right now.
You're very kind. Thank you.
Well, let's again give the number 719-619-2341. We're going to go to a break, but I want to tell you, hey, make a travel plan to go on May the 3rd. I'm going to be there in Colorado Springs for the Truth and Liberty Awards Banquet. I'll have Lance Wallnau with me in studio, but it's going to be a lot of fun. We'll be back. We'll talk with Louie Gohmert when we do.
I'd like to invite you to join me either as an attendee or as a sponsor of our Truth and Liberty Awards Banquet in 24. We started this last year, and this year the winner of our Samuel Adams Award is Pat Bradley with Crisis Aid International. I tell you, he is one amazing person. And then Coach Joe Kennedy gets the Samuel Whitmore Award, and I tell you, that's going to be great. And our guest speaker is Riley Gaines, the lady that has been standing up for, you know, getting men out of women's sports. It's going to be a great time. It's May the 3rd. It'll be at our Caris Bible College, and we do have sponsorships. This is a fundraiser as well as an award banquet. So if you would go to our website at truthandliberty.net, you can get all the information and join us on May the 3rd for our Truth and Liberty Awards Banquet.
At Truth and Liberty Coalition, we work to unify, educate, and mobilize the body of Christ to change nations. That's why I want to encourage you to go to our website at truthandliberty.net and subscribe so that you can begin receiving regular updates about our show, news items, action alerts, blog posts, and much, much more. All you have to do is go to the website, click subscribe, share your email address, and you'll begin to be equipped to stand for truth in the public square.
Hi, welcome back. I'm Janet Porter, your Friday host, with my favorite member of Congress. Congressman Louie Gohmert is here with us. And, you know, I've talked about his nearly two decades of service in Congress, and he served as Chief Justice in the appellate court. He was a felony judge. He was all of these things, but he also defended our country in the United States Army. And I just want to say thank you for your service across the board. I have a special love for Army. My dad was an Army sergeant. I think that's where I got my work ethic. no matter what time it is, Congressman, whatever time you'd wake up, it could be 6 a.m, and the answer would be for my dad, good afternoon. So you have that same work ethic. And one of the things that was really astounding to me is that you would read the bills. You didn't just put your name on something. You read the bills you sponsored, and you read what you voted on, and that was just unheard of and refreshing. And I just want to say thank you, because you've done the work, you've done the due diligence, and I'm grateful. I'm grateful for your gift to our country.
Well, you're so kind. And yeah, I mean, you got my head growing kind of big here. But and actually, nobody could read all of the bills. I mean, we're voting on multiple bills every day. But I really tried hard to make sure I read all of the important ones. And that includes the big ones like Obamacare, TARP. But we have been going down this road that you're spending money. If you go back to 2008, and again, I quoted John Adams earlier, John Adams said there are two ways to enslave a nation. One is with the sword and the other is with debt. And I was reading earlier this morning that, you know, some of the Wall Street folks are starting to warn we could be in trouble. And it just comes from a lack of proper stewardship with what we've been blessed with. If you back in 2007 budget, it was passed in 06. It looked like we were going to have $160 billion deficit that year, $160 billion in the red. We were in the majority in 06. The Democrats were rightfully beating us up that we should have balanced the budget. It's ridiculous not to balance the budget. And then President Bush pushed what Hank Paulson, former Goldman Sachs chair, wanted, and that was $700 billion so he could reward his friends and harm his enemies. And it was a disastrous mistake. If Congress had not passed $700 billion for Bush's Secretary of Treasury, then when Obama came in, and maybe he wouldn't have gotten voted in if we hadn't done that. That really did massive damage to the election. But in January 2009, Obama comes in and says, hey, you gave Bush $700 billion, now you're going to give me $900 billion so I can really get the economy going. $1.6 trillion. I mean, back at the time, I think we were bringing in not quite $3 trillion a year, and you want to go from $160 billion deficit to $1.5 trillion is what it ended up being in 2009. That is crazy. And ever since then, we have not gotten back to getting under that $1 trillion, getting back down to $160 billion. It's just spend, spend, spend. And most people wouldn't remember, but when we did that $1.5 trillion deficit in 1 year, there were a lot of people concerned, and I think it was one of the raters downgraded our debt from A+ to A, and that was going to have severe consequences, but the Obama administration, from what I've heard, they were good enough at threatening the other raters, don't you lower our bond service, and so that was the only one that did. And the guy that was head of S&P, he ended up losing his job. I mean, they come after people that stand up to them. But you look at what's happened. Now those rating services are saying, you know, we don't want to downgrade American debt. It would bankrupt the country. Our interest we'd have to pay would go even higher than $1 trillion we're paying about now, but it's a dangerous time to be spending that much money. I was in a meeting with a few of us, meeting with Prime Minister Netanyahu some years before COVID, and we were talking about national debt. And he said, where is the U.S. debt now? Because he knew, like most leaders know, if your debt annually is the same as 100% of your gross domestic product, then you're basically bankrupt. And he said, where is your debt to GDP now? And he said, it's about 100% of GDP. And he was shocked. And he said, oh, my gosh, I didn't know you were already there. And wow. Yeah. So it was a shock to him. And now we're 120, 130% of GDP. The only reason that the federal government has not gone bankrupt and had to cut everybody's pensions and everything is because the dollar is considered the international currency that everything it works off of. And the other thing, back in 73, there was a rumor that Nixon sent Kissinger to talk to the Saudis and make a deal. I haven't been able to find anybody that confirmed this, but what did happen was what Nixon wanted to happen. There were a lot of countries that were saying, hey, here's the dollars we have. We want gold for the American dollars. And we were running out of gold. So they got Saudi Arabia and OPEC to agree to only accept American dollars for oil. Well, then they couldn't demand gold for their dollars because they had to have them to buy oil. But there are countries, China, Russia, they're all working to get rid of the dollar as the international currency, and the dollar is the petrodollar, which you have to buy oil. And of course, Iran doesn't require dollars to buy their oil. But anyway, we're in a very, very serious financial situation here. And it's what happens when you have immorality that abounds because you haven't been teaching moral right and wrong.
Well, now let me ask you, first off, congratulations for reading the Obamacare bill. That's the one you all remember. Nancy Pelosi said, we've got to pass it to find out what's in it. Kind of backwards.
Yeah, I read it.
But what we're dealing with right now, and we had former Majority Leader Tom DeLay on a little while ago, and I asked him his advice of where we should go from here, because it seems like it's the same thing. We're on this treadmill. I want to know what advice you would give to Speaker Mike Johnson. He's a guy I like, but I don't like these budgets that are passing, and it seems like it's always the same story. We've got to pass it, because if we don't pass it by midnight tonight, then the government's going to shut down. And, of course, Tom DeLay's response was, shut her down. And he certainly has a history and experience in seeing that work. Sometimes we cave too soon. But what advice? You get Speaker Johnson on the call. What would you say to him about what's happening in the next budget bill that's coming up for a vote?
Well, I get the impression, I hadn't been able to talk to Speaker Johnson, Mike, as I used to know him, since he's been Speaker. But I've seen this play out before, and I remember when we had the biggest conservative wave election in many, many decades in 2010. You remember we won the House back and things were looking good. December, Boehner, as minority leader, caved and went along with his huge spending bill. And he was saying in conference, guys, I didn't have a choice. We've got no leverage. And I hear that being said now. We got no leverage. Democrats control the Senate. They control the White House. We got no leverage. And the answer is, yes, you do. And even in December, when we were in the minority in the House, there was leverage. But it would take a tough leader to stand up and say, we're not going along with you spending this kind of money. And in fact, if you have a majority still through the end of December till January 3rd, but if you insist on spending this kind of money and throwing this money down this rat hole and down this rat hole and helping these Democrat organizations so you can get reelected, you do that, then come January, we're going to treat you the way you've treated us the last 2 years as the chair of energy and commerce said when he was pushing cap and trade, he said, and Obamacare, we were trying to get some amendments. And he said, we don't want your input and we don't need your votes. That's the threat. That's the leverage. Look, if you don't work with us to fix some of these problems, then when you lose the majority in the Senate and you lose the White House, we're going to do exactly what you've done in order to try to fix what you were not willing to work with us to do on a bipartisan basis. Because too often bipartisan means you cave in and give everything we want, and then we'll have a big press conference together and say we did it bipartisan. That's not bipartisan.
By the way, one of the things, I don't mean to be full of flattery here, but you actually ran against John Boehner. That, I got to think that you were celebrating secretly, or not so secretly, when Matt Gaetz and people like Bob Good, who we're going to have on next week, they challenged the establishment.
Were getting text messages about, you showed us the way. And actually, I've caught grief over the years about, oh, this guy is such a big head. He thought he could beat Boehner, and he only got three votes, and one of them was his. Now, that actually was the idea of Jim Bridenstine and Thomas Massie. We had a group that was trying to get to 29 votes. If everybody was voting, and we got 29 Republicans to vote for anybody who was living except for Boehner, then that would throw it to a second ballot for the first time since 1923. But we couldn't get past nine. We were stuck on nine for a month. And so the weekend before the big vote on the floor on Tuesday, we were going to have a conference call that Saturday morning. Well, on Friday night, Jim Bridenstine, Thomas Massie called me and they said, Louis, we know we've been stuck on nine. We can't get anybody else to commit. Boehner's telling everybody they'll never get 10. They'll never hit double digits. And so everybody feels confident. But people back home are wanting somebody besides Boehner. And so they are telling their constituents, and I'd heard this, they're telling their constituents, I'd vote for anybody but Boehner if somebody else announces, but he's the only announced Republican, so I don't have a choice. And they said, so we need you to announce this weekend that you're running for Speaker. And then all those 40, 50 people that have been telling their constituents, I'd vote for anybody but Boehner if somebody announced, they don't have that excuse. And we won't get all of them, but maybe we have a good shot at getting to 29. And so I said, well, that's an interesting thought. And so I said, let me think about it. We got a big call of all nine of us in the morning. Let's talk about it in the morning. And the next morning, I prayed about it, thought about it, and they made their pitch. We need Louis to announce because he can get on more news outlets than we can. And I said, okay, guys, I think you got a legitimate point. But and everybody knew that if I announced, I would never get an A committee. I would never be a chairman of a full committee. All of those things would be gone ever.
Persona non grata. Uh-huh. Yeah.
I totally knew that, but they had a point, and I wasn't there for a chairmanship or a certain committee. So I said, okay, here's what I thought about overnight. If I announce that I'm running against Boehner, then even the left-wing media will join in with conservatives saying, you know, gosh, this crazy guy's taking on Boehner and he doesn't have a chance. He's crazy. Poor Boehner got a crazy guy like that. And I said, so I'm willing to do it, but I need one of you. You don't even have to have a press conference. If one of you will send out a press release saying, I'm announcing I'm running for Speaker, and you do that today, then I'll call Fox News, and I imagine they'll let me on. Back then, before Paul Ryan got on the board, I could pretty much get on whenever they wanted, whenever I wanted. So Ted Yoho from Florida, he was a great guy, still is. He's not in Congress, but he was a veterinarian, so he knew how to deal with the wrong end of a horse, and that's what you often dealt with. But Ted said, okay, Louis, I'll tell you what, if that's all it'll take to get you to announce, I'll send a press release out today. I said, okay, you do that. I'll call. I'll get, try to see if I can get on Fox in the morning, do it before church. So that's how he sent out the press release and he's announced. So when I went on Fox that Sunday morning, I was able to say, look, this isn't about me. This is about having a different speaker. And Ted Yoho announced yesterday, may have another. I was hoping Daniel Webster would do what he did, announce on Monday. So there are a number of choices. It's not about me. It's about getting a different speaker. And there was one article that was written out of all of them about what happened, and that pointed out, you know, I was overheard. I didn't know anybody heard but members, but out in the hall telling guys, look, you need to vote for somebody besides Boehner. Your constituents are demanding it. And everybody knows, yeah, Boehner's going to be upset if you don't vote for him. He'll be doubly upset if you vote for me. So don't vote for me. Vote for Webster. Vote for Yoho. Vote for anybody, whoever you want. But just vote for somebody besides Boehner. There were freshmen that had come in saying that they would never vote for Boehner. And we had others that had helped in 2013. They said, look, I'm not doing this again, but if all those dozen or so freshmen that promised they'd vote with you, if they vote with you, I'll vote with you. We had the potential of having 50 votes, but a number of those freshmen coming in that promised, they got contributions based on their promise. They wouldn't vote for Boehner. They voted for Boehner. And then, so we got to 24, but when we got to one guy voted present, he was trying to play both sides, but it didn't count. But we got to 24, and when we got 24, we were sad that we didn't get it done then. We were going to call for an emergency conference of Republicans, go down, they would cuss us, they'd scream at us. I've had that happen before. And then we'd say, that's fine, but we're not changing our vote, so let's agree on a compromise candidate. And that's really what you saw happen in 2023. They got the votes they needed, called for eventually they were able to work it out where they had a compromise candidate. And, you know, that's how it came to be. So anyway, that's what we were doing.
You were willing to take the hit, and that did pave the way for what Matt Gaetz and Bob Gooden and a group of Patriots did. But I want to just take a moment before we're up, because I have talked about this little side project that people think is just sort of a frivolous thing, of keeping us from all the serious work we're doing. But I just wanted to be able to be a light in a dark mountain of influence of the media. And so I wrote a book I got talked into writing back in 2022 called 2002. It's been a while. Back when I was single, it was called What's a Girl to Do While Waiting for Mr. Right. It turned out to be a bestseller. We turned it into a sitcom. It's going to be season one. Will be aired starting next month. We'll make more announcements about that as we come. But there's a guy mentioned in some of those episodes, and I just wanted to play just a little segment of What's a Girl to Do with a name that's very familiar that comes up from time to time. Let's take a watch.
But I'll tell you what wasn't great was Michael hitting on that headbanger.
You know, I thought about that. I mean, he's no Louis Gohmert, but Michael's a good guy.
And Trump's going to
make America great again.
Ruin America.
Liza said that because she watches fake news.
She's getting with
CNN,
whose viewers are
captive travelers at airports.
Something you have to do every day when you lose it.
On my cell phone.
But sometimes.
Not every day.
Sometimes.
Twice a day.
Yes. The man you want to marry.
Jack Lauer.
Yes, secret crush.
I don't really have
Congressman. It.
Louis Gohmert.
Opposite of the golden rule.
The metric system.
The two people who know you best at the party.
Mom, Lori.
Who knows you the very best?
Jeff.
Yes,
Oh, and I've been doing some research. And although it might not be easy, I'm going to strive to be as cool as Congressman Louis Gohmert.
A lofty but admirable goal.
What's a girl to do? So at the risk of creeping you out, it's just kind of fangirl ish, but it's a lot of fun. And I guess I wanted to show you that so that I could get you on record that you will make an appearance in season two. What do you think, Congressman? Can we get you in an episode?
I would be thrilled to. I hope it didn't kill the whole sitcom because it looks wonderful other than that. But I would love to. That sounds like so much fun, just being with you in that kind of cast.
By the way, just to share with people who just maybe need an inside scoop of what it's like to talk to Louie Gohmert on the text, he says, yeah, I don't think that if they say that I'm as cool as Louie Gohmert, that's like saying I'm as smart as Joe Biden. And I just thought that kind of says everything you wanted to say. But we're just thrilled, and it is going to be a lot of fun. We're going to disciple nations. We're going to show them what it's like to be salt and light in a dark and decaying place, and not always doing it right, but learning along the way. And we've got just a few minutes left. If you want to sneak in a phone call, this is your chance. 719-619-2341. Oh, and I got to say this so I don't forget. Not only do we have the Truth and Liberty Awards Banquet coming up on May the 3rd. It's a Friday next week. I'm going to be there with my husband. I can't wait to meet you. Consider being a sponsor. Riley Gaines is going to be one of the speakers. We're also going to have Coach Joe Kennedy, who is going to talk about religious liberty and how his case has shifted our nation in the right direction. Also, Summer Family Bible Conference coming up July 1 through 5, 1 through the 1st through the 5th. Andrew Womack will be there. You don't want to miss this. This is a great family vacation, and you get to watch the In God We Trust performance. These people are, it's like a Broadway performance. You just haven't seen anything like it. They blow you away with the quality. It is like a Broadway show, and you get to go as part of this conference, and you can also find out more and watch the programs you've missed at truthatliberty.net. I think that's all my official duties that are over. I want to get back to you, Congressman. We've got just a little over 5 minutes left, and what's on your heart? If you have a course of action, where do we go from here? What is your counsel for us in this moment in history?
Well, my heart is we have got to get good people out voting. They cannot stay home. This election has to be so overwhelming that you can't have enough votes brought in after the fact to overcome it. But it can only happen if people get involved. And I know that this was years ago that you had the comment, God doesn't bring America to justice, he owes Sodom and Gomorrah an apology. We're years past that, and we're at a place where kids are being confused about their gender. It breaks my heart. I mean, that we're confusing them. We get back to what's right and what's wrong. And it's very clearly wrong to cut off clearly working organs and destroy the future for that young person. So there are just so many things going on that are a result of us. Yeah, abortion is still going on, but it's just a matter of not enough good people standing up and doing what's right. So I'm hoping and praying that enough people will do what's right, because, God is in control. He doesn't want us to lean on our shovel and pray for a hole, as Tommy Nelson said. But also, let's face it, he often allows people to suffer the consequences of their wrong behavior. He forgives, full of mercy. But you look at King David. Yes, he finally sought forgiveness and he got forgiveness, but God didn't interrupt some of the bad consequences of what happened as a result of that, to the point where one of his sons would challenge him as king. And, Absalom, when his son was dead, I mean, he went through a lot of heartbreak. So God can work things together for good for those that love him, call according to his purpose. But sometimes he lets us go through the bad consequences of what we've done. And I am praying and hoping and working, hoping that we will have enough people wake up. This is still a republic where people elect their leader, so-called. They got to wake up and elect the right people, or we're going to lose this greatest gift of a country any people have ever been given.
I know this is about to get us kicked off of YouTube and who knows what else, but I think that the prayer that I make to God is that we didn't make the wrong choice in 2020. We actually chose, we chose life, and we voted for Donald Trump, and I believe that this election was rigged. Do you share that view, or is that not something you want to say publicly?
I know there are a lot of people that say, oh, that's been debunked 3.5 years ago. In the last 3.5 years, as a lawyer, I was engaged in federal multi-district litigation. I'm familiar with complex litigation. I was a judge over the biggest complex litigation in Texas history. I know something about it. And when you're going to try to dig out records, it is really tough to get those. When people have done wrong, they don't want to be forthcoming. They'll try to hide it. It takes a long time to dig up the evidence. But just what Dinesh D'Souza came up with alone was enough, as he showed, it could have changed and would have changed the election. And, you know, like we were lied to for so long. Those of us that were up all that night, we saw the vote counting paused in Philadelphia. It was paused in Atlanta. And for months, I kept doing a search. And the first 3 pages you would get were all articles about how there was never a pause in counting the votes. And you had to get to the 4th page. So there was a lot of suppression going on. There was fraud in the last election. There's been fraud in every election. And we're not going to eliminate it all. Some rules are in place. It's going to allow some fraud to go on, but we got to win so big that it can't be stolen. And we got to minimize the fraud that goes on. We've got to.
I want to sneak in. We do have a caller from New York, Dr. Joel Brind. He's a guy that helped to find the link between abortion and breast cancer. I just want to say welcome, Joel. We've got 30 seconds. First question I have for you is, did you see my plane in New York today?
Yes, I did. I thought that was wonderful. I said, what is Janet up to? I've been thinking about you the last couple of days. You've been on my heart and my mind. And there you are. You never stop being tuned in to what the Lord is asking us to do. And I thought that was just brilliant. And so I wanted to call in and give you some encouragement. People like me are watching. We haven't gone away. We're still doing my thing. And, leading me towards doing some other things. I'm writing my book about glycine. I actually ended up writing a children's book about Matthew chapter 8, about all the demons going after Jesus and Jesus going back after the demons making these stories come to life, you know. So
we're about out of time, but I think the deliverance ministry is one that may need to make a resurgence here, and especially after looking at what's going on in these college campuses. While we say goodbye, let's put that image up again. This is what Dr. Joel Brind saw in New York. It's the message that's going to be communicated across the country as we join together and get more of these messages in the airways. That's it. God bless Israel. We stand with you. So look up. We're fighting against the new Hitler Youth. And just with 10 seconds left, I just want to say thank you from the bottom of my heart for your service. Congressman Gohmert, you are a gift to America, and I can't wait till you're involved again to make a big difference.
We're not done. Thank you very, very much, Janet. You are a blessing to me. Thank you.
Yes or no? You have hope for America?
Yes.
I do too. God bless you. We'll see you next time.
Thank you for joining today's Truth and Liberty livecast. You can watch today's and past livecasts in our archives at truthandliberty.net. Our goal is to educate Christians and connect them with resources and organizations to help them impact their sphere of influence. You can help us accomplish this by making a donation at truthandliberty.net/donate. Join us next time for more Truth and Liberty.